Hi, this is Chris Wyatt from Marvel's Spider-Man and Stretch Armstrong and the Flex Fighters, and you're listening to Kneel Before Pod.
Kneel Before Blog presents Kneel Before Pod.
Hello and welcome to Kneel Before Pod, the podcast that doesn't need a headmaster anymore, but we might get one forced on us anyway. I'm your host Craig, and we're here to discuss the 90s X-Men cartoon. Yes, that one with the theme tune. Joining me for this discussion is my fellow mutant. It's Andrew. Hello.
Hello there. Always a delight for an excuse to break out nostalgia for the 90s.
Yeah, and you happily accepted the term mutant, so good. Mutant and proud, but that's not from this.
Yeah, well, it's slightly more elegant than freak that I am more frequently referred to as, so I'll definitely take it.
Freak will be the next word that people want to own.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
If that hasn't happened already.
Probably has with some subcultures, but there's so many I can't keep track anymore.
Yeah, too many to count. We need less subcultures. We need less diversity. Oh wait, have we missed the point of X-Men?
Perhaps we could take a look and find out.
It seems like some of the internet have missed the point of X-Men because Disney have infected X-Men with their wokeness. So let us dig in and talk about this not woke, apparently, 90s cartoon. Let's just start with a bit of a rundown of our connection to this show. So what was your connection to the 90s X-Men cartoon?
My connection to it was that I absolutely loved it. Basically, because when the show first aired, I was a young boy, starved for nerdy media, and this was basically a comic book cartoon. There's not a huge amount of things that I watched as a kid that I still think about now, but this series is definitely one of them. Even though I've actually realised I can only actually remember fragments of it. My watching of it is, I more remember it as a feeling rather than specific events.
It's vibes.
Exactly, and one that I have quite a positive connection to. And doing this may force me to face some harsh realities.
Maybe. Never revisit things, apparently, even though we're doing that right now. My connection to it is, I watched it at the time, but it actually wasn't my favourite of the Marvel slate that was around at the time. My favourite of those shows was Spider-Man. I love that show even to this day, and I do think it largely holds up. And then I enjoyed the Fantastic Four. There was Iron Man, the Hulk as well. The Hulk where Neil McDonough voiced Bruce Banner. Neil Before Pod MVP, Neil McDonough, that guy, Damien Dark, etc. He was the voice of Bruce Banner in that show. And was there other ones? Probably. But those are the ones I remember. And I watched them more frequently than this. I did watch this, but sometimes I found it a little bit too weird. And when you say casting your mind back, you only remember fragments of it. The thing I remember most about it is time travel. And I don't know if that was just when perusing television, watching it on Fox Kids and things. Those were just the episodes that seemed to be always on. I remember a lot of time travel.
There was a story arc in it that was based around Days of Future Past.
And they did Age of Apocalypse as well.
That too, yeah. But aside from that, I don't recall any specific instances of time travel.
No, like I say, it's probably that I just saw those episodes more often than other ones, and they stuck in the mind a bit more. That's the thing with thinking back on these things, is my memory's probably not accurate.
Exactly. You can be completely sure about the mental image that you've got, but when you actually physically check it, you find it's just completely different from how you recall.
Yeah, but it was part of that really successful slate of Marvel cartoons. They had a similar style. They took the material seriously as well. And it was a great jumping on point for fans that maybe didn't have access to comics in the way that they'd like to. I had some access to comics here and there. I don't know if you ever had the Essential Marvel books that they were releasing around about this time. You had Essential Spider-Man and Essential X-Men and so on. It was like 20 issues of stuff just reprinted in black and white. As I was reading through them, I was seeing the cartoons cover a lot of the same stories that were appearing in those early comics. So for Spider-Man, you see the Green Goblin stuff and the way they adapt it there. For this, it's Phoenix, really. There was the two X-Men comics. There was the original one and there was the reboot one where Wolverine and so on was introduced. So they did Phoenix and Dark Phoenix and the sort of rebooted one. And obviously that's adapted in this show.
And remains the definitive adaptation of Dark Phoenix to this day.
Yeah, it's actually a very accurate adaptation, including some of the weird stuff that was in that comic. We have a cosmic force bent on destroying the universe, but also here's a mutant singer that we have to go and deal with.
Because reasons?
Because they did that in the comic. Maybe that's a spoiler. Well, it's not mentioned here. So for this retrospective, I guess, this primer, we decided that we would cover initially the first two episodes, which then turned into the first three episodes, because I erroneously believed that Magneto turns up in the first two episodes. He does not. He doesn't show up until the third one. So cover the third one because Magneto is kind of important, in case you didn't know. So what are your spoiler-free thoughts on those first three episodes?
My main takeaway on it was that it was a lot simpler than I remember, obviously because I'm now like 30 years older than I was when I first saw it. But the plot and the characterization of it, it's very, very basic. It's hardly any subtlety or subtext to things that people say. And there are instances where they're actually vocalizing what would be internal thoughts, the way that you would see in thought balloons in comics, which felt did seem a little bit out of place. And you think that it wouldn't be that difficult to portray that information a bit more subtly, or just assume that it's implicit through characters' behavior. Get into more specifics when we go to spoiler territory. But the main thing was, it is very, very much a kid's cartoon, and definitely presented with kids in mind, and little that any parents watching might properly entertain them.
One thing that struck me by rewatching these three episodes is how quickly it all moves. It has to, because the episodes are only 20 minutes and it had a 40-minute premiere. So that was already longer than you would expect, but it gets you in there very quickly. It has so much information thrown at you, which I admire because they trust the young audience to follow it, right? And then by and large they do. And it's something that I think people making films and TV shows intended for adults should do, actually. Trust that your audience will follow it and don't over-explain things. Don't feel the need to assume that they don't know what you're talking about, because within a couple of minutes you get told what a mutant is, you get told what the kind of state of the world is, you get told about the persecution angle. This is all practically in the opening minute, isn't it? The idea of, yeah, Jubilee's a mutant, what's she doing? And oh, look, here's a mutant here that's Sabretooth being attacked and stuff. That's not quite spoilers, it's the first minute of the show. There's a lot there.
Yeah, and they're like, here's some people protesting against mutants, here's some people questioning whether mutants are dangerous.
Yeah, so it's impressive in that way. And like you say, there isn't a lot of depth, though, and maybe that's good because it wears its message on its sleeve and immediately tells you what it's trying to get at. This not woke cartoon that's trying to promote tolerance and freedom of expression and all that good stuff.
Yes, and empathy for people who are different from you. And because of who they are and how they were born, they will fundamentally have different life experiences. But because of who you are and what you were born as, you cannot inherently understand. So therefore, it takes a special effort on your part to learn and understand them. There's absolutely nothing woke about that at all.
No, but it's different because they have superpowers and that's cool. Whereas non-binary, that's forcing the woke agenda down our throats. Can't have that.
I see. That was a subtle distinction I didn't pick up on.
X-Men is just about people in colourful costumes firing lasers at other people in colourful costumes. That's all it's about. Nothing else.
Oh, God. Sometimes I find myself going back to, I don't know, it's really a meme, because it was like a sort of meme before things were even a meme. But it was basically a really simple cartoon figure of a guy with this flame on top of his head. And the caption, "The stupid, it burns." That's what I genuinely feel like when I have been reading reactions like that.
Media literacy is dead. It really is. Certainly for a lot of people.
Yeah, basically, because now everyone has a voice and can easily express their opinions about something, everyone thinks that they have something worth listening to.
Yeah, the right to speak is not the right to be heard. They are not the same thing.
Exactly.
Anyway, shall we get Professor Xavier or Wolverine or whoever I can find decent sound effects for to take us into the spoiler zone? The spoiler room.
Into the danger room.
Let's go.
Initiate Gambit Wolverine training sequence.
Okay, so as I said, this first couple of episodes introduces the concept, does it very quickly. Our focal character, at least in the first episode, there's something weird about that, which we'll get to, is Jubilee. So we meet the X-Men through Jubilee's eyes in part one, and through her we get introduced to the core ideas, all the characters and the situation, and immediately you're encouraged to be on her side because her foster parents don't know what to do with her because she blew up the VCR because she has fireworks powers. Jubilee was always weird. Sometimes she's really powerful and sometimes she's useless. And I think this cartoon actually nails that. Sometimes she can knock over a sentinel and sometimes she can barely tickle someone.
Sometimes she makes sparkles.
Yeah. Crazy. And she will later go on to be played by like four different actresses across many different X-Men films in different time periods.
I've actually lost track of the chronology of those films. I'm not sure there even is one anymore.
Well, there definitely isn't now because it's all gone.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was striking that they chose this approach because you're not getting an origin story for the X-Men. They're already established. Mutants have been around forever and the world is wrestling with them. And Jubilee's this focus that the audience gets to look at these things. And so you're brought inside with her. She's a foster child. She doesn't want to be sent with new parents. And I think crucially, her foster parents aren't bad people either. They're just a bit overwhelmed. So you get a little bit of complexity there early on.
Yeah. It's not like they fear or resent her. they just genuinely don't know what to do with her. And because of the such wildly differing opinions in the public discord regarding mutants, they genuinely don't know what the best course of action is.
Yeah, so they phone that number because they believe the media that says, if you need to know what to do with a mutant, phone this number. And we'll send around a giant robot to plow through your house. Who's going to pay for that, I wonder?
Never thought of that, actually. Didn't occur to me.
So within 2 or 3 minutes, you have the Sentinel flies in and just bashes its way through Jubilee's bedroom. Like I say, it moves very quickly. And within the first 3 or 4 minutes, you're expected to accept that mutants exist, the persecution exists, and that giant purple robots exist, all in this one world.
Well, if nothing else, it certainly lets you know what you're getting in for.
What did you think of this approach rather than doing a, we're going to form the X-Men origin story? And I know that the cartoon was differently conceived. There was that Pride of the X-Men unaired pilot that exists, which focuses on Kitty Pryde, and I think it's based loosely on the comic of the same name. But the show wasn't supposed to be what this is. It got retooled massively before it made it to air.
I was certainly aware that it was conceived in a different form. I do remember watching Pride of the X-Men, maybe on YouTube or some other streaming site. Though despite actually having seen it, I also don't remember anything about it, which is confusing to me. And just a personal thought, it did seem slightly more interesting to me, because overall, I think Kitty Pryde is a lot more interesting a character than Jubilee is. She'd be more engaging as an audience surrogate. It certainly was an interesting choice to not have a specific origin story. But I think doing so, it allows for a lot more efficient storytelling, because with origin stories, by definition, there's a lot of groundwork to be laid, setting up the backstory and the instigating circumstances before 3/4 of the way through the thing you actually see what you came for in the first place. But doing it this way, then everything is so much more immediate. And because of this, there isn't a need for every character to be painstakingly introduced and established so we know exactly who they are by the time the team eventually forms. But this way, there's a single instance when Jubilee is attacked by a Sentinel in a shopping centre that X-Men just happened to be in at the time, just by coincidence. But it also allows a little moments that show you glimpses of each character's dominant traits. Like the first time you see Gambit, he's flirting with a shop girl.
Who's throwing herself at him.
Absolutely, yes.
See anything else you like?
And he's having none of it. He's like, yeah, whatever. Give me the cards.
And then when he hears Storm and Rogue calling out, he's just like, don't go anywhere. And it also shows you that as well as being superheroes, they're also just people. People who just decide to spend the afternoon shopping. Because that's the kind of thing normal people do.
Yeah. And the lack of an origin story, that was a typical 90s superhero cartoon thing as well. Spider-Man didn't have an origin story episode until its third season, I think it was. And it was done through flashback. I think the Fantastic Four one did. The Hulk one, they did the origin in the intro. They showed you the bomb hitting him and things like that. And Iron Man, again, that just started with Forceworks, I think it was, basically. Him and his team, War Machine and Spider-Woman and whoever else that they could dredge into it. So it seemed to be quite a common thing. Even the Batman show didn't have an origin story episode. The Superman one did, just to cross the streams there and talk about DC. But it seemed to be a trend of we can introduce these characters without doing the origin story. And there's a bit of confidence in that, I think, because, yeah, here's the X-Men.
Exactly, because I think a lot of that is going to be down to the people making the series having a reasonable assumption that a large part of its fan base is already going to be familiar with these characters.
Or you can just follow it.
That too, yeah.
And you have Jubilee as your inroad to that, as in she gets everything explained to her.
Which itself is quite a common storytelling technique.
Yeah. Well, it's what they would do in the X-Men movie when it came out a few years later.
Well, I did always think that Rogue seemed like an odd choice to put in that position.
She was basically Kitty Pryde, but with Rogue's powers, wasn't she?
Pretty much, yeah.
I can understand that change, actually, because her powers is the perfect inroad to that, as in you fear what you're becoming. You can't touch anybody. It's dangerous for them and you, kind of thing. So I could see why they went down that route for the movie, even though there's been heavy criticism of the portrayal of Rogue in those movies, because she is nothing like her comic counterpart.
Yeah, because the only base of comparison is her powers and having a streak of white in her hair.
Which I guess is fine. It was an adaptation choice, and they did it with Jubilee here, which is slightly different, as in she can't really touch people without being dangerous or causing harm to them. And they do mention the thing that happens in the first X-Men film with Rogue, where she talks about, first time I kissed a boy, I put him in a coma or whatever.
I noticed that, actually, yeah.
So someone was watching this. David Hayter, who wrote the movie, probably watched this cartoon. and thought, I'm having that. Maybe not Bryan Singer. Don't think he would have watched the cartoons, but certainly David Hayter, who wrote it, he would have.
I think, honestly, the less about Bryan Singer, the better.
Yeah. So it's a decent enough intro. You get a sense of everything. And I think doing an intro for doing an origin story for the X-Men is very difficult anyway, because you have to explain who Xavier is, and then he has to find some mutants to recruit. The First Class movie did it really well, but I don't think they could have done it very well in a cartoon. So yeah, having them as a established thing, and it's, don't worry, we'll get to all their backstories later. We'll do flashback episodes for everybody. It's fine. We're going to have 5 seasons of this, and then however many years later, for some reason. So we're going to have plenty of time to cover everything. Don't you worry about that. But basically, you get the characters with their essentially core traits. And one of the questions I have is, are they more than the costumes that they wear, really? Is there more to these characters in these episodes than their distinctive looks? I don't think so in the first two episodes, but I do think you're starting to get that in the third.
Yeah, there's certainly the potential for them to be more than that. But in the introductory pair, I don't think there's really any time to explore them in any greater depth, because everything is spent on either scene setting or the action driving the plot forwards.
Yeah, you do get a bit of it when they're heading towards the file room and a few people are explaining their backstories to each other. Even though we've been a team that's been together for an untold amount of time, I'm telling you the story that you probably already know.
Just watching the first few episodes of the series, I've got the impression that they as a team haven't been together that long.
It's difficult because they're clearly comfortable around each other. They're adults, and I think later on they establish that at least some of them have been there for a while.
I think it's possible that some of them may have known each other before they were actual full-on superheroes, before they became a team to battle against injustice done to mutants. But right to begin with, there certainly isn't anything specific that we learn about them, other than the odd comment. Say, like, with Storm mentioning the Rogue has a way with men.
Yeah, as she's flying towards the Sentinel, giving everyone a really good view up her dress.
Yes, but since it's a children's show, we're not supposed to think about things like that.
Yeah, we don't get it from that angle. I mean, considering how, at the time, Rogue was just drawn as naked with clothes on. You know what I mean? It's this naked outline just with clothes over it.
I remember there was actually one shot, I think it was in the second episode, where it's basically of her flying towards the camera, basically boobs first. There's like a massive pair of boobs coming right towards you. Yeah, that's a deliberate choice.
Clearly the animators were wanting you to be thinking about that.
But in a way that they could get away with doing it.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. It does seem to be somewhat early days, at least in some ways. You have that bit where Xavier says to Jean, I always knew the X-Men would be revealed to the public one day. Well, if you're worried about it, why have you given them primary colored uniforms with big X's on them? It doesn't really scream anonymity, does it? But Xavier's a weird character in this, which we'll definitely get to in the third episode. Incidentally, one of the funniest bits, I laughed a lot when Jubilee just fell over in front of Cyclops and she's like, who are you? And he's like, Cyclops. Oh, that clears it up. Thanks.
Why do you think that answers the question?
It's possibly the only badass thing that character ever does. He's such a douche in this show, isn't he? He's actually more impulsive than Wolverine.
Yeah, the thing is, because he believes so much that he's the rational, level-headed one, that he just comes off as being completely obnoxious. Because Wolverine knows that he is hot-headed and aggressive and impulsive, and doesn't pretend that he's anything otherwise. Where Cyclops seems to be of the belief that his sense of superiority genuinely makes him better than other people.
And Wolverine's your enigmatic cool guy at school, isn't he?
The damaged outsider with a mysterious past kind of thing.
It's the bit where he's like, I'm not going on this mission. And then he just shows up. Wolverine, you decided to come? And he's like, yeah, I'm not coming. Yeah. There's some good stuff like when Cyclops tries to appeal to what he wants. It's like, you want revenge? Because I can help you get revenge. And he's like, yeah, okay. I'll hang around for an hour day or two. It was in the comics anyway, but it's something that certainly translated to the movies, as in Wolverine just disrespecting Cyclops and stealing his stuff, stealing his cars and his bikes and stuff.
I always found it hilarious.
In terms of plot, I mean, there's not a lot here. I think a lot of it's texture, a lot of it's giving you a sense of the world, but it's, we need to go and destroy the computers and set fire at some paper and stuff so that all the records of the X-Men are not there anymore or something. It's thin.
Yeah, and it now seems really, really quaint. The notion of completely destroying files also involves physical copies that need to be burned.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit where Beast is keying on the computer trying to erase them, and Storm's like, we don't have time for this, and she trashes the computer. Like, will that do it? I don't know. Did we have network computers in the 90s?
Well, you blew up one terminal, but not sure what that's going to do to the entire server.
If they did indeed have a server, you would think so.
I imagine so, just with the amount of information that they need to keep on file.
Yeah, those sentinels are uploading it somewhere.
And also bear in mind that this was the early 90s, when a server room was literally like one server, was an entire room.
Although it's comic book early 90s with technology that we don't have now.
Yes, like tanks that shoot laser beams.
And killer gyms. How many X-Men do you think have died just training?
It's a very valid question. This I don't think gets brought up often enough.
Yeah, because Gambit almost dies in this episode. He almost gets crushed. That's Xavier's recruitment thing. It's like, if you can survive the danger room, you can stay. Otherwise, we'll carry you out in a bag or something. Depends how much of you is left.
Yes, and despite of that, everybody else seems to think it's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just how we train. We work hard, we play hard. But one bold thing it does plot-wise is there's a character death in the, well, second episode, really. He does die in the first episode, but you don't understand what's going on until the second episode. Morph, who was, I believe, created for this cartoon. He didn't exist in the comics before this.
No, the general consensus seems to be that is a variation on Changeling. But to be honest, it doesn't really matter anyway, because his whole purpose was to be killed.
I think they do introduce him in the comics eventually.
Probably. I honestly can't recall for certain.
It also turns out he's not dead. There's a later episode where he appears again, and he's brainwashed or something.
Yeah, then he ended up working for Mr. Sinister.
Something like that, yeah. I don't actually really remember, but I do remember that he shows up and he's working against the X-Men.
Also, the original plan was to include Thunderbird as a character who was immediately killed off to establish that Stakes were dangerous. But I think as someone quite wisely pointed out, you want to kill the one Native American character that you've got. That's probably not a good idea.
Also, the plan seems stupid that gets Morph killed when you have Morph. He's a shapeshifter. Just have him walk in. Have him disguise himself as someone in charge of that base and walk in.
Yes, but unfortunately, that kind of plan doesn't have as much action.
It doesn't, no.
So therefore must be vetoed.
Yeah, you could have had someone jump the guy in charge, Morph takes his place, walks in, and he deletes all the files. I mean, we have United States presidents who can print off nuclear codes, so why not?
And also a female United States president.
Yeah, that's insane, isn't it? The female president in this. Just out of nowhere.
I'd actually forgotten that, amongst many other things.
All I remembered was Senator Kelly, who also appears in the movie, but he dies immediately.
Yes, yeah, turns into some frog sort of liquid thing.
Yeah, but he has quite a big role in this over time. He's introduced here, but that's it, not much more. But killing off a character, especially when they talk about incorrectly at this time period, they talked about censorship. The Spider-Man cartoon was frequently accused of censorship, but it wasn't censored in any way. It was just that there were studio notes that you get on everything. So that's why you have the laser guns instead of guns with bullets. It was just a suggestion to have that. I interviewed John Semper Jr. and he talked about how he didn't have Gwen Stacy in the show because he didn't want to introduce a character that he'd then have to kill off.
Fair enough, yeah, because that's like the one thing people know about Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, what does Gwen Stacy do? She dies. Well, maybe not now, actually. I think she's probably better known as Spider-Gwen now than she ever was as the girl who died.
Yeah.
It's an interesting rehabilitation, perhaps a conversation for another day. But anyway, so the whole notion of censorship is incorrect, and this proves it, because they kill someone off. You don't see him actually shot with a laser. You see him shove Wolverine out of the way, and then it's implied.
Very, very heavily.
Very stupid on Morph's part, though. I'm going to push the invincible guy out of the way.
Yeah, that did bug me.
Though I don't think Wolverine was as strong as he is now when he was being written at this time, both in the comics and this. You see him passed out in later episodes. He's out of the game for quite a while. Whereas certainly now in the comics, or as recently as I've read anyway, and in the films, he heals instantly.
That's the problem though. The powers of superheroes, it can be so inconsistent that it can be difficult to keep track of how powerful they're meant to be at any one given time.
Yeah, but certainly in this, Wolverine can be incapacitated for quite a long time before he's back in commission again. He can heal from anything, but also it's not instant. It's not that you evaporate his skin and it just immediately comes back.
Not that watching bones crack back into place and flesh knit together.
Yeah, they would never show that in this cartoon anyway because gruesome. But the most you get is he's just lying on a bed with some bandages and everyone's like, Wolverine's out of the game for a while. It's probably what would have happened here if Morph had just left him. Yeah, it'll be fine. We just need to drag him back.
Yeah, it's frustrating when characters make stupid decisions for no other reason than that's what the plot requires of them.
Although I suppose it's a spur-of-the-moment, heat-of-adrenaline type thing, isn't it? Oh my god, Wolverine, that thing's going to shoot you. I'm going to push you out of the way. Oh yeah, you're invincible. Oh wait, I'm dead. Oops.
Damn it. Didn't think this one through.
Yeah. Oh no. I think the death is actually handled quite well. It's a significant portion of the next episode. You get to see Wolverine dealing with his grief around losing Morph. And it's interesting if you think about how old he is. How many people has he lost over the years? It just seems like it never gets any easier for him.
It also demonstrates that he's a character who has genuine and complex emotions. He's not just this ball of permanent aggression, constantly looking for a fight. He does actually form genuine closeness and connections with people, and it can be devastating to him if he loses them. And that actually really humanizes him.
Yeah. And then the weird thing in the second part is that the Jubilee intro thing is gone. She's captured for most of it. And then the episode ends with her going, yeah, I'm going to live at Xavier's school now. Thanks for being a great foster family. Anyway, bye. It's not the through line, is it, through these first two episodes? The first episode is very Jubilee heavy, and then she's largely absent in the second episode.
Exactly. She was just an entry point to the main team. Yeah, it's like Jubilee's story shows you what the world is like, and then the rest of the X-Men is what's going to keep you interested in coming back to it.
Yeah. And the thing is, I don't think Jubilee's featured that heavily later on. She'll obviously have episodes here and there, but I don't think she's ever really much of a focus after this. She's just sort of there.
Again, I genuinely don't remember.
I have vague memories of her being like, I want to go out on a mission. They're like, nah, you're too young. You're useless. You're staying here. We'll send everyone else.
If I'm being honest, the only real reason that I remember her being a character in it is because she's featured in the opening sequence. Shooting off fireworks out of her fingers or something.
Yes, and the character's name is actually Jubilation Lee. That's her full name.
Yeah, and one thing I do remember is that all the time watching this, I never actually realised that she was meant to be Chinese.
Yeah, it says Chinese American, doesn't it, on the Sentinel scan.
Yeah, but I just completely missed that. Which really shows you just how observant to detail 10-year-old me was.
Well, you didn't care, I suppose. That's actually a good thing.
Yeah, I'll take that.
You were being tolerant. You were just like, ah, yeah, whatever. She's just a person. It's fine. Another seismic thing that happens is that Beast gets captured and then his imprisonment lasts a while. I can't remember exactly how long, but I seem to remember it dragging on over several episodes, definitely.
Yeah, which is quite an unusual thing for cartoons at the time. It does seem weird to think nowadays when literally every TV show in existence is this lengthy serial narrative. In the TV shows back then, and in particular kids' TV shows, it was far more frequent for there to be little ongoing continuity between episodes, and at the start of each episode, everything would just be reset to a status quo, regardless of how things ended in the previous one. Which, as a random aside, is why in The Next Generation, when Picard gets assimilated, that's why it ends with to be continued, to actually show that things aren't going to reset when we go back to this. But anyway.
And the show looks like it's going to do that. It's going to do that reset, although not until the third episode, which is kind of an extension of the second episode anyway, because it's the previously on X-Men, you get that for that episode. But it looks like Magneto's going to break him out and then that will be it, and he'll be back with the team by the end of the episode. But then he's like, no, I'm going to stay because I need to put this issue in front of people and let them see that I'm not dangerous and things like that. And the idea that he doesn't think he's above the law. He wants to be part of humanity rather than rising above it or feeling like he's above it. It's an interesting angle, I think. And I think it says a lot about that level of tolerance. We don't want special treatment. We want the same treatment everybody else should get.
Exactly. Beast effectively saying I was caught committing a crime and now I am going to take the opportunity to both justify and explain myself.
Yeah. Magneto says that they're above humanity, where Beast says we're part of it. And it's that distinction that makes that conflict so interesting.
And also what makes it interesting is that although they have fundamentally different viewpoints about how mutants should interact with humanity, in essence, they're all fighting for the same thing. They just don't agree about how to go about it.
Yeah, and that brings us naturally on to the introduction of Magneto in the third episode. Obviously, it's important because he's essentially the main villain throughout the series and can't get rid of him in the movies either. He's always in there somewhere. And again, it's interesting how much of this show's DNA folds into the films. And I know it's the comics as well, but this show specifically, it just seems like vast sections of it were lifted almost directly and then transplanted into the films, because you have the same Xavier-Magneto dynamic. Magneto believing in the superiority of mutants, Xavier arguing for the coexistence, as in we're not better than they are, we're just different and we need to celebrate that, we need to find a way to work with that, which is done in a much more, I want to say, pantomime way in this show, where Magneto's like, I'm just going to create chaos and then I'll proclaim my point while I'm doing that. Whereas Xavier's like, no, don't do that, it's not right, you should stop lifting all this metal stuff. Also, Magneto was called Magnus in this, not Eric Lyncher.
Yeah, that did bug me a little bit. I can only assume it's because Magnus is the closest name in existence to the word magnet.
Yeah. I don't know if he ever went by Magnus in the comics. Probably.
Possibly. I genuinely don't know.
All I really remember about Magneto in the comics, certainly early on, was when he had Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch as his cronies, and they got into Saturday morning cartoon-type villainy adventures that would end with them stuck at the bottom of the ocean in a submarine or something like that. When Scarlet Witch had her vague trippy-uppy powers. Like, I can manipulate probability or something? I don't know.
Oh, right, yes. I can't remember what you're talking about.
Scarlet Witch doesn't appear in this show, I don't think. She's in the Iron Man show.
don't think so, no.
Quicksilver does, I think. But Wanda, I don't think she was ever called Scarlet Witch, but she's in the Iron Man show. Certainly the first season. The cut to him dressing in the armour with a CGI suitcase show. That one. Love that show, but it was dumb.
That's another one I can only remember fragments of.
The second season was better because it got more badass. He had a mullet and he had his smart-talking AI called Homer. But we're not talking about the Iron Man show. Maybe one day we'll get to it. So what did you think of the introduction of Magneto? How do you think they did it? And the fact that he's introduced breaking Beast out of prison? Or trying to?
I really like the way that it was done initially, because you initially don't actually see who is breaking into the prison to get Beast out. And even Beast himself initially assumes it is Wolverine causing all the chaos. And also, when Magneto floats through a massive hole in the wall, Beast doesn't recognise him. To show this was the first time that they actually met. Which was one of the things that made me think the team might not have been on operation for that long. Because if this was the first encounter of an adversary with such a significant history with Charles Xavier, and you would have thought that his presence would have become known previously if the team had actually been together for any significant length of time.
Yeah, doesn't Xavier say that Magneto has been dormant for a long time? I'm sure he says something like that.
He may have done. It's possible Luna was barking at me when that line was being said. Must have missed it. But also, Magneto choosing to try to break Beast out of jail, it shows that he believes that they have the same cause, and that even though this is someone who's been working with Xavier, he still believes that he's someone who can be recruited to his side. Which, I think, on one hand, it shows an open-minded way of thinking, is that even someone who might naturally be an enemy due to who they're allied with could still be an ally. But on the other hand, it seems a little narrow-minded from acting on the assumption that this person's a mutant, therefore they must agree with me.
Yeah, his motivation is to stop Beast from being made an example of, because he doesn't believe that the human justice system will treat him fairly. I can't remember how the trial goes, but certainly based on the information we have already, it seems like he's probably right. But Beast wants to give it a go anyway. He wants to tell his story, so he chooses to remain. And then the episode ends with Magneto launching missiles that he wants to use to blow a bunch of stuff up. So the subtlety of his actions is somewhat in question, isn't it?
It's variable.
Well, my subtle approach didn't work, so here's some missiles.
Okay, so if you won't fear me because I'm floating around and crushing the most powerful weaponry you have without even touching it, then you will fear me because I can will your military's most destructive weapons to fly and obliterate you wherever I so please.
Yeah, and you get the quick stab of Xavier and Magneto's backstory, where Xavier's like, yeah, we used to be best friends, and then we weren't best friends, and now he's my enemy.
And we weren't, because we disagreed on things.
We disagreed once, and that was enough. Destroyed our friendship completely.
Forever. Forevermore. That was it, done.
We'll never be friends again, except from all the times in later episodes where we'll be working together. And there'll be that asteroid he tries to make at one point, all that stuff. It's going to be insane. Can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
You do get the first sense that Xavier's not quite on the up and up in this episode as well, because he doesn't tell the X-Men about Magneto until he has no choice. So he says, oh yeah, there's this villain and he's my worst enemy and you were going to have to fight him one day, but I wasn't going to prepare you for that by telling you. So here's the information now.
Surprise.
Yeah, deal with it. And you also have Sabretooth, who is, as we learn here, one of Wolverine's oldest enemies. Certainly the oldest one he can remember, anyway. And they capture Sabretooth and Wolverine's... It's not clear what he's going to do. Just take him somewhere.
Yeah, just remove him from school because he's too dangerous to be there.
I'm not going to kill him, honest. I'm just going to take him somewhere and we'll never see him again. Sure thing, Wolverine. But you get Xavier saying, no, you can't do that. We have to try and help him because he's a fellow mutant. And it's like, nah, he's bad news. You'll regret this. But also, we need to bring down Magneto. We can't reason with him. We have to bring down Magneto. And Wolverine has that great line, how come we're supposed to trash your old enemy, but we've got to go easy on mine. Love that, that he takes Xavier to task.
Yeah, that was pretty good, actually.
And again, in X-Men 3, one of the good scenes is a similar moment where it's revealed that Xavier put all the mental blocks in to keep the Phoenix out within Jean. And Wolverine's like, do you understand how messed up that is? You just took this choice away from her and you think that's okay? The film doesn't do anything with it, but it is said. It's a good scene. So there's shades of that there. And then Wolverine's happily on the team after that. That's how flaky he is. He's like, I was annoyed 5 minutes ago, but now I'm going to take my metal skeleton and fight this guy that can control metal. Sounds like a good idea. Which he doesn't really do, actually. He doesn't do much to Wolverine, does he?
Though it hadn't actually been established at that point in the series anyway that Wolverine actually had a metal skeleton.
No, other than the metallic sound it makes whenever his claws are unleashed.
Yeah, but it's always been quite a common thing for any bladed weapon being unsheathed to make a metallic noise, regardless of whether or not there's anything metallic for it to scrape against when doing so.
Yeah, but that was a good line that created a little bit of conflict. And something I was thinking about is there seems to be a bit of an evolution from 80s leader characters, people like Optimus Prime and other 80s leadership characters. And then in the 90s, you had this change in tack because Optimus Prime, for example, would just always be right, wouldn't he? Or Splinter from the Turtles. Was that late 80s they started? It was, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
So Splinter and Optimus Prime, they would always be right. Every word they say is right. They always give the best advice. Everyone's quite happy to follow their lead. Whereas the 90s, you got a bit of a change in that. I remember in Gargoyles, Goliath would give bad advice sometimes. He would make mistakes and he would usually own up to them, but he would make a mistake and people would follow up on his bad advice and make mistakes as a result of that. I think it's something they did in the 80s because Optimus Prime is like the parent figure. So we want to teach kids to respect their parents and listen to their parents. So Optimus Prime equals parent. Listen to Optimus Prime. Listen to your parents. Whereas in the 90s, it seems a bit, your parents don't have all the answers. Don't listen to them. Question everything they say to you. And there's certainly a bit of that here, where Wolverine is questioning Xavier, saying, well, you lied to us, or at least didn't tell us stuff. And you're telling me to bash on with this double standard. I have to let my worst enemy be held captive and, in theory, helped by you. Well, you're telling me to destroy your enemy. Make that make sense. I think that's an interesting approach and an interesting change. Don't know if it's naturally growing older or such, because as you grow older, you start to realize that your parents don't have any clue what they were doing and never did. It was all a carefully cultivated illusion. But the idea of these leadership figures become fallible in these 90s cartoons, I think is, if not a deliberate trend, it's certainly a trend.
Yeah, and also in that vein, in cartoons of the 80s with a group of central characters, any courses of action were always established with a great amount of team cohesion, where it was shown that people in the majority who thought the same were the ones who had to be listened to, and any voices of detraction were always shown to be ultimately wrong. Even if their suggestions were actually better, they still had to be wrong, almost as if to suggest that voicing disagreement or attempting to establish your own way of thinking about the situation was something to be avoided, something to be looked down on. And things like what I talk about demonstrate a subtle shift away from that, and that perhaps more traditional ways of thinking might themselves have been incorrect.
Yeah, because you see that in different aspects in this show, mostly through Wolverine, though, and Cyclops, where Cyclops is the team leader, and Xavier's the dad, effectively. He's the big boss, and Cyclops is the team leader. But Wolverine is constantly disrespecting him, constantly challenging him, constantly refusing to listen to him. You're going to stay here. And it's, yeah, I go where I want to go, which just so happens to be on that mission. That's where I want to go right now. That's how flaky I am. I might just do the thing you want me to do, but I'm not doing it because you want me to do it. I'm doing it because I want to do it. 90s Wolverine.
Almost like a petulant child. All right, not because you told me to.
Yeah, I'm doing this for me. My goals just don't happen to align with yours. And to your point about the X-Men are a relatively new team, the idea that like, Wolverine's been brought in, but it doesn't seem to make sense that he's there at all. Because everyone's like, well, we thought you were a savage animal when you appeared. Actually, kind of turns out that you are, but you're still here. Anyway, I'm sure you'll leave and have side adventures for a while and then come back. I seem to remember they do the Japan arc for a bit.
Again, I don't remember.
And I remember there was a World War II flashback that Captain America in it as well.
Probably should have watched more of this before doing this recording.
Nah. It's good that we just don't remember it.
You can say things that might have happened in it, and I could probably picture things like that happening, but I might just be wholly inventing them in my head.
They were following a lot of stuff that happened relatively recently in the comics. They were doing some of the big arcs, but they were also doing stuff that was relatively recent at the time. Even the designs, that was how they were being drawn at the time, wasn't it?
It was, yes. And also the characters who were being featured, Storm, Wolverine, Rogue, Gambit, they were a specific team in the comics and one branch of the various X-Men titles. I can't remember exactly what team was called, but I remember they were a specific team.
I'm going to guess X something.
Either X something or X-Men color.
Yeah. Incidentally, one thing I do love in this show where you've got all the code names. So you've got Cyclops, Wolverine, Beast, Rogue, Storm, Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Because I guess they thought Marvel Girl was just too lame.
I remember reading something explaining it was something to do with Jean Grey and the Phoenix Force, and to do with Phoenix becoming her code name, but the timing of when the cartoon was being made in relation to the comic was off. Something, I should have looked this up, I remember.
I don't know if she was dead at this point in the comics, I'm not sure.
To be honest, it's a coin flip, really.
Yeah, she's either dead or not. She's not really in these episodes that much. And they haven't established her relationship with Cyclops yet, either.
Basically, at this point, she's Charles Xavier's sidekick.
Yeah, and they haven't established that Wolverine is the hots for her, either.
No.
We haven't seen the meme of him sitting on his bed, stroking a photograph of her.
At this point, she's barely even a character. She's just there.
I think you can say that about most of them, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, but she's just like a presence. She's someone who's just there.
Yeah.
She's taking very little active participation in anything.
Do you think we'll ever get a version of Storm that is as colourful as this version with our language?
I don't, but I wish we did, because it would be fantastic.
Or just yelling about the power of lightning as she's summoning a thunderstorm, that kind of stuff. It'd be great.
Exactly. It would look absolutely epic seeing her doing that, as well as being hilarious.
Yeah. Can't imagine Halle Berry doing it, though.
No, she's far too refined for that, to be a serious actor.
Or what was her name? Alexandra Shipp?
Alexandra, yes.
Can't remember anything about her Storm, really, actually.
I remember her having a different hairstyle.
She becomes one of Apocalypse's horsemen, that's about it.
Yeah, I generally can't remember a single line of dialogue she had.
No. And she was in, what, two films? But could you imagine the Storm asking what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
That was actually a joke that an editor on this series would have rejected as just being too stupid and corny.
Yeah, but it wasn't delivered properly either. It was supposed to be matter of fact. It wasn't supposed to be this epic, almost movie trailer line, the way that Halle Berry ended up delivering it.
Yeah, but also a thing to remember is that when the first X-Men movie was made, comic book films in general, there was only the slightest inkling of them actually being taken seriously.
Yeah, the X-Men movies were trying to be more grounded and serious. That's why they wore the leather, black uniforms. The fact that they had accurate powers was remarkable in itself.
Yeah, that's true. Can give them that, certainly.
So these three episodes, everything you need to know is in there, really, because you get the intro to the X-Men, the intro to the world, all the major conflicts, you get Magneto, you get a sense of what the dynamic between Magneto and the X-Men team is going to be. Yeah, you get everything. It's actually quite an impressive opening. It's incredibly dated, but I think it does a good job of establishing itself. It's easy to see why it's so well-remembered, plus the theme song, which is insanely well-remembered.
Yeah, if you remember absolutely nothing else about the series at all, you'd remember the theme music.
Did you ever see the Japanese intro for it, though?
I don't think I did.
I'll put it in the show notes, but it's equally insane, but in a different way.
I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, it's worth it. Did you have a favourite character in the show? Maybe not based on these three episodes entirely, but just in general. Or were you just going to be boring and say Wolverine? Because that's what I'm going to say. He was my favourite character in this show.
No, I'm going to be boring in a different way and say Rogue.
Okay.
Because basically she's hot.
Fair enough.
But also someone with a power set of like superhuman strength and indestructibility is undeniably pretty cool.
Most of which she stole.
Also true.
Remember they do that in this show. They show you the origin where she holds on to Ms. Marvel, as she is at the time, for too long.
I'm not sure if I remember that or if I just remembered seeing a still of that scene.
There was the rumour that the Marvel's main villain was going to be Rogue at one point, but it never happened.
Honestly, I think that's just wishful thinking.
Yeah. I really hope they do that with Rogue, though. I suppose it doesn't have to be she attacks Captain Marvel. She could attack anybody that has all those powers.
Yeah, anyone with like a significantly high power level for her to siphon off.
Sentry or something. They're already bringing that character in.
I was going to make a joke about not remembering who that was, but I think it was going to get a bit esoteric.
Do you have anything else to say about the intro to the show? I don't think I've got much else to cover. I do have some bit about there's shades of Nazi Germany with the whole registration and persecution thing that they obviously don't dig into because that's a lot for kids in the 90s, but it's there.
Yeah, and I also thought it was very pointed when Xavier said that he and Magneto met after a war.
Yeah.
Very pointedly not specifying which one.
Which war? Don't worry about it. You'll see World War II later when Wolverine teams up with Captain America.
But there's nothing specific that I can think to mention.
Cool. Well, I was right. We weren't going to be talking for hours on this because, frankly, even for us, that would be a stretch.
Yes.
So let's talk about the revival, which is why we're having this conversation. The X-Men 97 show, as it's called, is coming back, or is coming on the 20th of March. I don't know when this is released. Hopefully sometime before the 20th of March. Let's assume that you're listening to it before the show comes on. What do you think about bringing this back? Do you want it, or do you think this is a relic best left back in its day? Do you think it's a perfect snapshot of this kind of storytelling at that time, and we don't need to see it again?
I honestly believe there is no reason for the new series to exist. It doesn't need to exist. We've certainly managed fine without it for the last 30 years.
And it ended, right? It finished. There was an ending.
Exactly. And that's the thing. We've had this conversation before, but it's certainly becoming more and more pertinent an observation to say that it's okay for things to just end. They don't need to be continued. They don't need sequel series. They don't need to be revisited or revived, they can just end and exist when they were relevant, basically. What I feel is going to be a fundamental issue with this series, this kind of largely superficial storytelling was perfectly acceptable in the early 90s, but people, and in particular kids, they expect a lot more from TV shows. A lot of kids' TV nowadays is absolutely fantastic. There's a lot of series that I will happily wax lyrical about my enjoyment of. But I think if the new series was to be in any way true to what it's trying to be, then it would need to try to replicate this same level of surface-level superficiality, which for something new being made now would feel like something that shouldn't exist anymore. I honestly feel that this series, it was fine when it was made, it was great when it was on, and we don't need more than that.
Yeah, I agree. And there's been better X-Men cartoons since this as well. I don't know if you ever saw Wolverine and the X-Men. It got cancelled after two seasons, which is quite a common thing with Marvel cartoons around that period, where they get two seasons and then they get cancelled. Spectacular Spider-Man, anyone?
Ugh, don't.
I would argue that Spectacular Spider-Man is better than the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, but it also couldn't exist without it. And I feel the same about, say, Wolverine and the X-Men. It couldn't exist without this cartoon, because they sort of paved the way for these sorts of things. And there was X-Men Evolution, which I never watched, because it was in that period where I thought I was getting too old for this sort of stuff, before I realised, no, you're not. Just watch your Marvel cartoons. So maybe one of these days I will watch X-Men Evolution and see what it was actually like. That did have Kitty Pryde as a significant character.
The thing that I remember most about that series was Rogue as a gothic teenager.
It seemed to focus on the younger characters, didn't it? With the adult characters being sidelined a bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was very much a teen-focused kind of thing.
Yeah. And then Wolverine in the X-Men was... Wolverine was bringing back the X-Men after the mansion got blown up or something. I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember loving it. So there's been better cartoons since then, and I don't think we can really recapture this. It's the latest stop in the nostalgia train, isn't it?
Exactly.
This was popular once, let's bring it back. But who's it for? I mean, is it for us? Are you really going to bring in a new audience with this? I don't think so.
Or is it just a way for stunted man children who've found a way into a position of production executives to relive their childhoods?
And corrupt X-Men with their wokeness. Never forget that.
I just can't.
I saw someone posting online, they were talking about what they would like to see from this cartoon. Since it exists and there's nothing we can do about it, what do they want to see from it? And it doesn't seem like the trailer's giving us that, but why not put these versions of the X-Men in the later arcs that post-dated them? So put them in like a Claremont story or something like that. Adapt one of these later stories that were a bit more out there and complex and unsettling in some ways.
That would be interesting, actually, yeah. Never thought of that.
So you thrust these 90s characters into 2000 settings. It's a bit like what they did with the comics, you know, when they ran out of ideas and decided to bring the teenage X-Men from the 60s into the modern day, and they were just horrified by everything they see. Throw these X-Men, these 90s X-Men, into a more complicated world that they don't know how to deal with, and they don't have their teacher to help them through it. Instead, they have Magneto, that has a copy of Xavier's will, which is the longest will ever seen by the looks of things.
Right? That was just ridiculous.
It's just a bound, large book.
How much assets does the man have? Yeah. If he's that loaded, no wonder he can afford to fund such a ridiculously expensive endeavour.
Yeah, nuts. Absolutely nuts. We won't talk too much about the trailer because we already talked about it, / we'll talk about it, time travel, on a news podcast that will already be out by the time you're listening to this. But I thought the trailer looked fine. I don't really like the new animation style. I understand why they've done it that way, but I don't really like it.
It's an odd thing, just by the very nature of what it is, an updated smoothing of a very retro style, or what is very retro now, anyway.
Sort of cel-shaded, but with kind of modern flourishes in the background. It's a bit weird. And I think it's weirder that you're seeing these versions of the characters in that more updated style as well. Splitting hairs. But we don't know what the show will end up being at this point in time, so we'll give it a go and see what happens. I feel like they might need to give the poor Wolverine voice actor a break, though. He actually sounds like he smokes 20 cigars a day now.
Maybe he's just getting into character.
He is hundreds of years old, but he doesn't sound like he's hundreds of years old. Well, the thing is, with this cartoon, it's still the voice I hear whenever I read Wolverine.
He did capture it so incredibly well.
Yeah.
Almost everything he says is like a growl.
Some voices have been replaced, though. Whenever I read Xavier, I hear Patrick Stewart. Whenever I read Magneto, I hear Ian McKellen, not these guys.
The X-Men movies were absolutely spoiled, having two actors of that caliber playing central characters.
Yeah.
They're just so utterly embodied everyone's perception of them now. That's all that people see and hear.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman's iconic, but I don't hear him when I read comics.
I remember actually when the X-Men movie first came out, there was a rundown of what seemed to be really odd casting choices, listing it as two legendary English Shakespearean thespians, the child prodigy, a 90s heartthrob, an ex-wrestler, an ex-model, and an Australian.
The Australian playing a Canadian that everyone thought was American.
Ah, it's great how things confuse people so much.
Yeah, and now you can't imagine anyone else playing that role. So much so that he's still playing it, despite having how many swan songs now?
One which seemed to be very definitive.
Which was also the swan song of Patrick Stewart's Xavier, which then got undone by the fact that he was in Multiverse of Madness.
That film was a lot of choices.
Anything else on the upcoming show, or indeed this show, before we wrap up?
Nothing specific, just that watching the first few episodes ahead of doing this, it has actually made me want to rewatch the rest of the entire series now.
Oh no.
Just to re-experience what it was like and have a better appreciation of what it was actually like and how it can be placed within the progression and development of how stories like this are told.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll do that, but sure. One thing I noticed was the Disney Plus quality is very bad, particularly in the sound. I don't know if it's like that on DVD. I do have it on DVD, but I don't know if the DVD is equally as lazy, but it wouldn't surprise me if Disney just uploaded TV rips or whatever.
I haven't noticed any particular quality issues on the DVDs I was watching, but then I don't have the fanciest TV, so it might not have been evident anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. But anyway, yeah, I think that's us. So that was our chat on the first three episodes, as it turned out, of the 90s X-Men show. I would like to thank Dave DeVille for the supplied music. And if you enjoyed what you heard, please do hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Wherever a podcast feed exists, we also exist. You can also usually give a rating and a review, certainly on Apple Podcasts, but also on a bunch of these other platforms. Andrew, I would ask you, how many stars should the listeners give us?
That would be 5 stars, if you've been gracious enough.
4 more stars than Jean Grey as Phoenix Destroyed.
I was trying to think of a thematically linked way of saying that. Couldn't think of anything in the moment.
Well, there we go. I got your back.
Always appreciated.
If you want to talk about X-Men or anything else, you can hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Blue Sky under the Ableford blog. Blue Sky is now available to everyone, so watch it turn into the same cesspit that Twitter/X has become. It'll just take a little while, but it'll get there. You can also join us on Discord as well. We do have an engaged community of at least one listener that lets us know what they think of our stuff. So join us on there. You can also leave a comment on neilbeforeblog.co.uk. And as always, we hope you'll join us next time on Neil Before Pod.